I'd like to call the meeting of the Fire Emergency Service Committee to order at 19:01. I'm glad to see everybody. After we had, 4 months since we had the last meeting, I think it was? Before the election.
It was May.
May was our last meeting.
Was it that long ago? Wow.
May? We had our joint meeting, June, Lindenburg Regional, September or something.
Yeah, I thought it was one, I thought we had one in the fall. I don't know. Maybe we should go around the table here so everybody kind of, we got some new faces here. And so everybody gets to see who everybody is. So we'll start on your side over here.
Hi, I'm Morgan Reinhart. I'm a new counselor for District 1. So I have 4 fire departments in my district, Petite, La Have, United Communities, and Italy Cross Middlewood.
Hi, Martin Bell, District 2, and my fire departments are at Concord All Bank, Pleasantville, and a portion of La Have.
Pam Hubley, District 3, and I have Hempfordton District, Midvillain District, and Tri-District.
Elspeth McLean-Wile, and I'm the mayor, and I have them all.
I like that answer. I'm Dean Smeisser. I'm Deputy Chief of Day Spring Fire, and it's the co-chair, or the vice chair. Chair tonight.
Chris Kennedy, Fire Services Coordinator for the municipality.
Sandra Chalice, Admin Assistant.
Allison Smith, I'm the new counselor for District 6, which is a new district. Used to be mostly District 7. So my fire departments are Walden, Cornwall, and Northfield, and New Germany also provide services to parts of my district.
Hi, I'm Emily Bowers. I'm one of the representatives from the fire world. I'm a captain with Hebville Fire Department. I've been in the fire service for about 9 years, and I'm also in the town department in Bridgewater.
Hi, my name is Herb Seymour, and I'm the
member at large,
right.
I'm Patty Sharp, and I'm from West La Have, and I'm a member at large.
Thank you. Approval of the agenda as circulated. Motion by Councillor Hubley, seconded by Councillor Bell. Question? All those in favor? Motion carried. Presentation.
So this is kind of this is an orientation package for the members of the committee and for the new councillors especially. So we're just going to give a kind of an overview of the reason the Fire Service Committee exists, the reasons behind what we do, how we interact with council, and then there's a little bit on there on some of the strategic priority stuff that we had come up with in the past number of years that was approved for me to start to work on. So that's kind of what this is for. So we'll go through it and see how it works out. And
push play.
Please don't ask me to help you.
Oh, you want to go ahead? No. Yeah, then you just one of those.
It's not coming up on the screen for some reason.
Oh dear. Okay.
It's different than when I do it other ways. Usually you click up there. So we'll try that. It's not making me, Sandra.
What, you've done something up there?
Get somehow that most is getting in the way. That's what happened. All right, sorry about that. Let's continue. So the purpose of the committee is to, it was formed in 1990 to improve communication between elected officials, thank you, and fire and emergency service providers. And the Fire Service Committee advises and makes recommendations to council on matters around fire and emergency services through the Fire Services Coordinator, and that position was created in 2016. And this role was requested by the Fire Services for many years before it came to be, and to provide an advisory and consultative role for to council. So that's kind of the reason, that part of it. And the committee purpose continued to recommend improvements, consider policies relating to fire and emergency services, and make appropriate recommendations to council, review and make recommendations for funding principles, research and examine issues as directed by council, and report finds back to council.
No, I've gone too far.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
That's okay. We're good. Research and examine issues, report finds back to council via the Fire Services Coordinator, and liaise between Fire and Emergency Services Committee and the Fire Services. Members at large were added to add a different perspective on their views, so it's nice to have council members, fire service members, and then members of the public at large, because they sometimes view things differently and have neat ideas and bring different views. So that's why we decided, that's why we added those. A survey from Fire Emergency Service was conducted in 2022 and 2023, and listed priorities from the committee workshops and discussions. So we had several workshops and then come up with a survey. The survey was done, and then we had some more, a couple more workshops to discuss the survey, and then we generated a work plan to work on from that survey and the workshops. So some of the things that came back from that in the high orders from the survey was safety. So self-contained breathing apparatus functional testing was discussed, and that's now a mandatory function of the registration, of the annual registration. Capture firefighter numbers, and training or certification, enhanced opportunity for regional training, and work on some standard GOGs, which are general operating guidelines that could be implemented through fire services. Some background on some of the strategic priorities and work plan. So some other things were capacity and governance. So to work with the Lunenburg Regional Fire Emergency Services Committee to address gaps in priority, and some of those gaps that we brought back from the surveys and discussions were level one firefighter training, leadership and human resource skills, and an enhanced opportunity for regional training, and then continue MODL's current leadership training sessions offered at individual fire departments, and grant to continue specific leadership training. So these are there's some funding available for, it's like soft skills, so not operational type things or tactical type training, but for leaders or people that want to be leaders in the fire department to have a facilitator go to them, and then they can take some training on how to deal with each other, respectful workplace stuff, and how to be a leader and deal with people that way, which, you know, some fire services don't have a lot of that training. And it depends on where they work or what their jobs are, depend how much, you know, they're exposed to that kind of training. So that's something that we've done a few training on now, and it's worked out well. Worked with Lunenburg Regional to develop standard personnel policies and could adopt across all MODL departments. So there is an operating guideline committee that Lunenburg Regional has that passes some operating guidelines through the committee, and we just have to work a little harder with them to see how they can be adopted more across the board. Encourage automatic mutual aid and its benefits. Years ago, that wasn't done a lot. More and more departments have automatic mutual aid in place now, so that if there's a call comes in for like a structure fire, that departments are automatically paged, and it saves time and effort and gets people and resources there quicker by doing it that way, instead of waiting until somebody gets on scene and says, we need help, and then you have another 15, 20-minute wait before they show up. Recruitment and retention, so continue the existing program that we have. Work with Lunenburg Regional for a template on intake policy and application process. and promote existing business community group recognition. Regional training facilities, have a discussion on regional partners on the concept and components and location, et cetera. Recommend an annual contribution to the MODL reserve for the facility. Currently, I believe there's $200,000 in there. There was $100,000 each of the last 2 years put into that reserve fund. Work plan was approved by the Fire Emergency Services Committee to be worked on by the Fire Service Coordinator over the next 4 years. And that's kind of it in a nutshell. It just kind of gives you an overview, high overview of what the committee's here for and what our roles are as a group working together. So if anybody has any questions, I can try to entertain them. It's kind of just an orientation, I guess, for everybody as to where we are and how we got here. All right. Chair.
No questions? Okay. Business arising from the minutes.
So this, yeah, that's just more of an information thing because it was done last year.
Okay.
But you can just, that's what that's for. Everybody can know that's just that.
4.1.
They mostly talked about, thanks, Sandra. I can never remember that. They mostly talked, they went over their new bylaws about an hour and 20 minutes, an hour and a half, hour and 15 minutes. They talked about that. Then there was a fire call at the first of the meeting, so they lost the majority, or three or four of the members of the, so the discussion was basically on that. They went over the cost of the, they went over their financial records. They had talked about some of the training things that are coming up and some of the level one programs that are going to be starting up locally again from local instructors and local fire departments doing the training for that. And I think that was pretty much the majority of what they talked about that night. And there was some roundtable stuff. Departments have some training and different inspections on some of the gear. But other than that, that was pretty much the majority of that meeting.
Perfect. Thank you, Chris. New business, 6.1, nominations for social glass limit to receive a recognition certificate.
So if you go to that item 6.1, so you go to that page, and if you look up top, if you read, that could probably be pretty much be the motion. The motion aren't usually written out like they are for council, but Tri-District asked if they could nominate Social Glass, so I guess if somebody would like to make a motion somewhere to the effect of that.
So moved by Councillor Hoobley.
Second.
By Emily Bowers. Just give me a...
Well,
I sometimes I look at somebody and I just can't get the name. That we accept the recommend a award or recognition to Social Glass for the let leave members go to fire calls. Question?
Can you use your mic?
I got it on. Sorry, it's on.
Sorry.
Okay.
So I can.
Any questions on it? All those in favor?
Thank you.
The motion carried.
I'll make sure that gets done. We get the certificate done up and everything, and then I'll let you know when it's geared up.
Awesome.
Yes,
okay.
Thank you. Fire coordinator annual presentation.
All right. So 6.2.
Yep.
I gave this very similar, well, the same presentation. Except I added a couple of things, a little different for this one for the committee, but the presentation and most of the stats will be the same. See, now this one's going to act totally different here. Come down here. There we go. So there were some the annual fire service awards given out last year. So there were 8 50-year firefighter awards given out last year. So that's pretty incredible when you think about it. We're one of the few places in Canada that has that kind of years of service. Atlantic Canada has always had high service levels like that. in Ontario and different places, they're actually looking at maybe a 15-year award for firefighters to try to keep them to stay in the service longer in the volunteer side because they don't know how to keep them in the service. And they actually pay volunteers out that way. I guess I can read your names off who they were. So it was Aubrey McCarthy of Hebb's Cross Fire Department, Walter Jodry of the Northfield and District Fire Department, David Vino of the Mahone Bay and District Fire Department, Donald Russell and Philip Smith of Hemford and District, Mervyn Mossman of New Germany, and Charles Horseman and Reed Wynott at Bridgewater Fire Department. And these are other awards that were given out. So there were three 45-year awards, five 40-year, 11 35-year, 9 30-year, and 19 20-year awards. So when you think about the years of service, it's pretty amazing, right? The dedication and expertise that they give to everybody. Station years of service were also given out to Italy Cross and Middlewood for 60 years, Oak Hill and District for 50, and the Blockhouse and District Fire Department for 80 years. So all the stations have, after 15 years of service, have a plaque, probably the size of the screen that's in front of you, and then on has a fire department engraved on the front, and then there's a spot with a thank you from council for their service and as a fire station. And then there's a helmet that goes on. Every 5 years, they get a helmet for years of service. So when you walk into the station, you can see that in their station, and then if somebody looks at it, they can see how many years of service that station has been in working order. So that's kind of what that's for. And that was the work plan that we went over in the orientation, the same things, the same four main groupings. Fire station visits and other updates. So last year, I did a round of visits to fire departments, and I've done 20 of the 23 so far. And we talked about the family assistance program that we have at the municipality funds for part of the recruitment and retention strategy. So a lot of firefighters and families out there don't have that through the different, if they're self-employed or if they have a business that maybe not large enough, they would have an assistance program like that. It allows them to call up and talk to somebody for, you know, normal things, that life-to-life things that happen throughout the day or year. So they can reach out and talk to a counselor or somebody about financial matters. So it was really nice for them to do that. And I just kind of talked to them about how important it is, that it's a strength if you can reach out and talk with somebody. And I know it's being utilized. So I don't know how many. I haven't seen a report for a bit on that, but I'll have to check into it. But I know that there are fire services using it, and they've called and asked how they can get on and log into it. So it's good to see that it is gaining some speed for people to use it. There's a provincial one I know out there, too, that's also free. And we decided that we would keep this one until we see what happens with the provincial one, because those things sometimes come and go. And we wanted to make sure we had something in place for the volunteer fire services and their families to utilize in case anything happened with that. So it gives them something to fall back on if they utilize everything in the one that's offered through the municipality. That gives them another stepping stone that they can reach out to if they need to. So it kind of gives them another avenue. We helped mediate some, or I guess the next one, training officer soft skills. So that's what I discussed a little bit there. We've had a couple of courses done last year at stations, and there's one more coming up next week for a station to finish their training. And it talks about, like, stress, talks about how to handle like stressful situations and talk with each other when you're at stressful and elevated situations. So they had some really good feedback from that department, and the members that took it said that it's going to be beneficial for them to work with each other and on a going forward basis. So they think about things before you say things and kind of talk with each other in a more respectful workplace. And, you know, most departments are pretty good, but it's just nice to have that little extra if they need it, right, to give them that ability. We help mediate some issues brought forward from different departments for assistance. So we don't have any operational type ability with fire services, but we do help them if they come and say, hey, listen, we're having an issue. Is there some way you guys can help us with that? So we can do some research, or we can meet and talk with them to try to help mediate some stuff. So we've done some of that, which is a positive thing, I think. And it's nice to see that we're building bridges and have the appreciation of fire services. They feel safe enough to come and do that with us. So I think that's a good thing. We work with Lunenburg Regional and the Fire Services Committee on training initiatives. that are brought forward, and we started looking at some work plan items in more detail. Requirement for SCBA functional testing is complete now, and so those are two. That's one of the two things that we've added over the last number of years. That and pump testing was the first one that we did. And then this is the joint pump testing cistern or test pit that's in the Bridgewater and back of Bridgewater Fire Station. So how many years ago that was now? Probably, I don't have a date there. It's 4 years anyway that we came up with this. It was a joint effort between the municipality and the town of Bridgewater. So you can see the hoses going into that test pit there. There's 25,000 liters of water or whatever in it. It's broken up into different chambers so that a pumper can hook into it and pump water out, and then they pump water back into it, and it keeps a nice steady flow of water, so there's not a lot of aeration or anything into it to aggravate a pump when they're using it. So they use it for pump testing now, and you know, more departments are utilizing it now, and it can be also utilized to train pump operators. So it's being utilized more by just departments going in and training on it too. So it's good to see that. I think Martin had his hand up.
Cool. Martin?
Question for Mr. Kennedy, please. This testing facility, can the pumper come in there and do everything that they currently go to Wilts Lake on the wharf and do? So is it absolutely necessary to have pumpers at the park? If we were looking at developing the park and trying to keep the mixture of parkgoers separate from firefighters doing their equipment, it's something that has come up a number of times, and I just wanted to make sure that we didn't push any fire departments out of the Wilds Lake facility if this facility was available.
So this facility is available, but it doesn't replicate or replace some of the things they can do in Wilds Lake still. So Wilds Lake is still a main source for water supply for when there is a fire. So that's, you know, something that they utilize, because they do have a dry hydrant on this side of that little peninsula that goes out, that little jutment that goes into the water. And there's some things you can do there that you can't do in Bridgewater, like spraying water around in different places. In the test pit, it's going from the pumper back into that test pit. If you're spraying water all over the place, and, you know, there's, you know, brooks there, there's people's backyards, so you're a little more restricted. And while they can spray it off into the woods a bit, in places to utilize water and hose lines differently. So there are two kind of separate, in my opinion, there's two kind of separate utilizations for those two areas. And Wilds Lake is very important for a lot of departments still practice there. They do wildfire practices there because it's easily accessible. So it still really is utilized quite heavily by fire services, and it's one of Tri-District's main water supplies if they have a fire call in the district. So to me, it's really important to maintain it as a firefighter, firefighting ability too. I'm pretty sure that the chief and tri-district will have the same opinion if anybody asks him about it also.
Well, thank you very much. It's good to have it explained out.
Yeah, and there's six departments that have access to that with a key through an agreement, and throughout the year there's probably four of those departments that utilize it quite regularly for those kind of training purposes, like I mentioned. So thank you for the questions. They're very valid. Here's some of the leadership soft training skills. So this is the members of the fire department that took the training. And it's just, you know, the little bubble chart here just talks about some of the things. So great leadership, you know, it's all those things combined: delegation, commitment, creativity, communication, attitude, humor, and honesty. So, you know, empathy could probably be in there, Sue, in the bubble somewhere, but all those things make a leader a good leader. And this group, you can see they're smiling. They really had a really good time. They really engaged well, and they said that they wish they would have had a long time ago. So it's good to hear that feedback, and it's good to see that, you know, fire departments are taking some interest in it. And I try to push it whenever we have a Lunenburg Regional meeting or whenever we're talking to anybody that, you know, that's available and it's something they can utilize to help them out if they want it. This, I always put this on there. It's the Fallen Firefighters Memorial in Ottawa. If anybody ever has a chance and they're in Ottawa, you should check it out. It's quite an amazing memorial for fallen firefighters. Unfortunately, that happens in the role of work that they do. But it makes the hair on the back of your head stand up, and it's a pretty emotional place. It's charged with energy when you go there. And just that firefighter made of all the couplings that were melted down from across Canada that were sent to it makes it kind of a special place. It actually has breathing, living pieces of fire equipment built into the statue. That's kind of neat. So, information from the 2024 registration package. So most of the data that's collected is a year old, and it comes in June and is captured. So medical first responders, there were 227. And there were 204 previous to that. Structural firefighters, there were 346 now, and there were 322. So that kind of comes in line with some of the training that's been done. There's been 20 each some members in the last year or so that's gone through some training. Active firefighters, 605, and there were 603. Junior firefighters, 39, and there were 31. Auxiliary members, 122, and there was 124. And honorary members, there was 146, and there was 136 the year before that. Self-contained breathing apparatus flow checks, they were all completed, as were the pump testing. And those are the two mandatory requirements now for the registration process. These are some of the calls. So, like I say, if you add up the numbers, you're not going to get 100%, because if I put every tiny little thing in there, you're going to have so many little things, you're not going to be able to look at everything. But these are the biggest ones. And I guess the interesting thing is the call volume is going up. There was 1,212 in 2022. In 2023, there was 1,458. And by listening to the scanners and hearing people responding this year so far, I don't think there's going to be any lesser calls this year, because everybody seems to be pretty busy. And as we have more and more residential and commercial stuff in the areas building up, fire departments are going to get called on for service more and more. So, Town of Bridgewater had 39 mutual aid calls in the municipality. And that's just to the municipality. There was other calls also to, like, Barrington, the Shelburne fires. They get called to Digby. So they get called to different areas and also to the two towns. The town of Mahone Bay had 27 calls into MODL coverage areas and 14 mutual aid calls outside of the town. And they also service District 1 and 2 from the town of Mahone Bay. And town of Lunenburg Fire Department, I'm sorry, I got that wrong. The first one, the middle one, is the town of Mahone Bay, and they service Maders Cove, Clearland, and Oakland. And those were the calls they had. Town of Lunenburg is the last one. They had 49 in District 1 and 2 and 29 mutual aid calls into other districts. So they're all pretty busy and doing their thing. And the town of Lunenburg, like I say, they do Districts 1 and 2 also for coverage. And these are the funding to fire services outside of the fire department area rates that they have ability to utilize. So the recruitment intentions are around the $50,000 mark. WC premiums are estimated at $50,167. And right now that's on the lowest amount that's available through the premiums through WCB. And then that total is, so you see the total, there's just like over $100,000 for those. And you look at the municipal grants that are given out, that's around $196,000 in 23 and 24. And then you look at the total of those two together, just a little over $296,000. So sounds like a lot of money, but when you divide it up amongst 20 departments, it goes pretty quick.
Wondering, if there's a 911 call in this area, do the firemen and the policeman and the ambulance all attend?
So typically it would depend on the type of call. So if it's just a 911 would take that phone call, like one of the main 911 dispatch centers would take that phone call, and then they would, looking through their criteria and their protocols, they'd say RCMP only needs to go to this one, or EHS only needs to go to this one. And if it's something that has fire into it, or there's fluids leaking or something like that, they're automatically going to punch all three of them. So it all depends on who's there and what level it is. Sometimes they're all there, and sometimes it's only one or two of them at a time, depending on what type of incident it is and severity of it. So, but fire seems to get called quite a bit to most things. Cats and trees or anything, right? Like, they seem to be the first ones to get called. And that's kind of, and then overall, the overall tax amount that was utilized through tax, through the tax rates for fire services, just over $4 million. So, sounds like a lot of money, and it is, but when you look at it, it's all volunteers doing the work. This is like their operations. This is total expenditures for everything. Funds raised by departments through the Nova Scotia Firefighter 50-50 draws and claimed for fundraising is applied to our matching grant formula, so they utilize that funding as part of their matching grant formulas now. So the 50-50 proceeds were $536,000, and fire department fundraising was $742,575. So that's the difference between them. The funds were assisted through many departments through the year. During COVID restrictions, they were unable to do much of the traditional fundraising. So this 50-50 fund has really helped a lot of fire departments get through those. And it also allows fire departments not to have to do as much fundraising as they used to and spend more of their time training and doing things like that instead of fundraising. So, you know, it's only so much time to go around when you work full-time and you have family life. And then try to put, you know, a day or two a week in the fire hall or more. So it's nice. Some people say they should fundraise more. Well, I think training is a lot more important in my book anyway. Funds were there to assist fire departments through the past year during COVID-related restrictions who were unable to maintain traditional fundraising activities. And it allowed departments to make purchases of equipment that they, you know, gives them extra abilities to buy extra equipment that they may not have budgeted for. And usually when you'll see on a lot of the fire department's Facebook pages and things now, if they buy something new, like some departments have bought extrication tools for, you know, car MVCs and for motor vehicle collisions and things like that, or maybe some bunker gear or whatever, they buy firefighting equipment, and they'll put it on the page that the 50-50 draw helped to allow them to get those purchases. So it's kind of nice to see that it's getting put, so it's something that's utilized by them. And this,
like, all of the 50-50 is for all of Nova Scotia, and so how is it divvied up?
So when you go on and buy your tickets through the website that you can go on, through the Amherst Firefighter 50-50 group, when you buy your tickets, there's all the fire departments are listed, and you click on which one you want to utilize. So everybody gets a piece of the whatever is brought in through the fund, but if somebody wins, then they get a little bit bigger piece. But they click on each fire department that they want to support, and that's how the funding gets divvied out. By
it's I think if I'm correct, it's 37% of the dollar. So 37 cents on every dollar that is ticked off of that fire department they get. And then there's also one at the very end that you can click all. So if you buy $20, it's divvied up. I think it's 298 departments.
Like
I think it's in the 50-50 now. So it does add up, yeah. Over when the larger ones Christmas time, they do well.
Is Cape Breton included?
The whole province.
Okay. Yeah, it's quite a big adventure when you think about it. So like some of the things that are being done for the MODL continued funding with the recruitment intent retention. So it's advertising, newsletters, flyers, those kind of things. Numbers have been seen to stabilize somewhat. So it's hard. It's always hard because it's a very cyclic thing with how membership works in the fire service. But that's as best we can capture it. And we have the family and assistance program for firefighters, which I think is really super to have. Leadership soft skills that are offered. And I actually take some training around when we do some of those also, and I've offered it to fire departments. I've been fortunate enough to take some training on some resiliency-type training, so I take some of that to fire departments and do some sessions with them on, you know, how to ground and center ourselves and, you know, do some little movement stuff with them and talk about, you know, how important it is to be healthy and keep our heads in the game, right, so we have to do all the different kinds of things to keep us where we need to be. And so that's something that I can offer them at no charge, and something I love to do, right? So, cost to outfit one firefighter. So these numbers are not exact, but it kind of gives you an idea of what it costs. So, you know, when you look at the total costing there, it's getting up there close to $18,000 or whatever it is. You got helmets, $410, boots, $200. Boots, depending whether they're leather or a standard boot, can be $200 to $400 and higher. Gloves, $140 and higher. particle hoods are 155 and a standard flash hood is 70. So the particle blocking hood just keeps all the particulate and stuff from getting in against your skin during firefighting activities, right? So there's carcinogens and everything in the smoke. Bunker gear average cost, $4,000. Some of them are higher than that now. SCBA average, $10,800 per pack per one firefighter, plus training and et cetera. And the average weight carried by one firefighter is 29.63 kgs, or a little over 65 pounds. So, you know, by the time you outfit a firefighter and then put all the training and everything into it too, it's quite a bit of an evolution of time and expense. And this I just threw in here. I'm not going to go through this block by block. And in the little updates I gave everybody has the full report in there. But I thought it was kind of interesting because some of the stuff I have starred in there are kind of very similar things that we see, right? Like the number of volunteer firefighters and from 2022 to 2024 are going down. You know, that the numbers aren't always stable in all the areas. So number of career firefighters, number of vacant positions is kind of an interesting one. Number of female firefighters has gone up a percentage point. So it's nice to see that because that's an on-tap resource that we should have you more and more in. I know I'm involved with several female firefighters, and I'd go in a building in a heartbeat with them. Wouldn't even think about it. This is just another number on some of the calls and some of the related expenses, percentages of suppression calls, et cetera, so I'm not going to go into that too deep. And these are some of the other things that are very close. Turnout gear, 10 years old, so, you know, how many people are utilizing and have something, a plan in place to replace, you know, bunker gear and other pieces of firefighting personal protective equipment when needed. And then we need to look at, you know, the older than 15 years old for apparatus. These are some of the things that, you know, we deal with on a regular basis. So these are kind of standardized things. Pumpers that are older than 15 years old. Radio networks. We're pretty lucky in Nova Scotia. We have a new TMR radio system that's, you know, the envy of many. Is it perfect? No. There's still lots of spots that are dead zones. But it's, you know, at the top notch in the radio industry. Rescue units and tankers, so very similar type of things that our fire service in our areas across Canada also are feeling the same kind of things, right, same kind of expenses. Some of the things that they talked about were no industrial wash machines for turnout gear or PPE extractor. So a lot of departments will take their gear to a central location in the area to have their bunker gear cleaned after calls or once a year to have them cleaned and inspected, depending on how dirty they have. And a couple stations have their own washer dedicated to cleaning bunker gear. So it's really important. Years ago, it was like a badge of honor. The dirtier gear, the better it was. And today, it's the reverse. You know, you should walk into a fire station and see clean gear hanging there and you shouldn't smell a lot of stuff in there. That's kind of the way people are leaning towards, right, which is nice to see. This is just talking the same thing about, you know, trucks and different upgrades and computer software, et cetera. Nothing really highlighted there as such, but they're all very similar things across the country, right, that everybody are seeing things in. And then on the bottom here, some of the recommendations are they're looking at maybe having to install a national fire administrator that can work with government and work closely with the National Fire Chiefs Association and with government closer to come up with some ideas between the different organizations. So that's something they're looking at redoing. And they're also looking at maybe to re-stimulate they used to have what they call a JEP grant, which was a Joint Emergency Preparedness Plan, where fire departments could put in for funding through that also. I know some years ago when we had that, departments were putting in like repeaters for the radios and things like that, then get cost shared that way. And that went away, you know, so that was another avenue of funding that they couldn't access. And that's kind of it.
Any questions for Chris? Guess you're off the hook.
For now.
$6.3 million 2025-26 budget. You want want me to bring it up? Or
yeah, go ahead. It's something you guys have talked about every year. So,
in the past few years, the Fire Service Committee has usually recommended the municipality for a percentage increase. So this year, we recommend for an increase of 2% to the annual list of grants for fire departments. If the committee wishes to make the same recommendation or recommend a different percentage for the fiscal year 2025-26, and the following motion will be required. We usually do 2% every year, right?
That's what they had said a couple of years ago there, yeah.
So what's the wish of the group?
And this will typically, if it's a motion is made here, then it usually goes back to council, and then they make a decision. They make a decision after it goes to council.
Motion by Emily Bauer, second by Hube.
Herbert.
That we propose a 2% increase in our annual grant for the municipality. Questions? All those in favor? Opposed? Motion carries. Here. Where are we? 6.4, draft strategy.
So that one Alex was going to do, and he's not here. He's under the weather the last couple of days, so we're going to defer that to the next FESE meeting for Alex to do so that I don't say anything out of step. Just keep it all copacetic.
Perfect. 6.5, information on fire taxing, current and historic.
Yeah, so that's just a just an information piece on the last, from like 2018 up, on tax rates.
Perfect. We have no added items. Nothing to go in camera for.
Going to reschedule a meeting, maybe?
Yeah, first next meeting.
So there was an email sent out asking everybody what their preferences were. What are your preferences for dates? I know Councillor Bell said the 13th was best, and he was the only one I heard from. Oh, sorry, the 12th. Anybody have a preference on the 12th or the 13th? Would the 12th work for everybody?
Okay.
I know there's so many meetings.
I checked, and it didn't matter, but I just wanted to check where I was sitting here.
12th is okay for me.
Okay, great. Mm-hmm. It's good for her? Yeah.
The 12th.
Yeah. All right, good. So we will say the 12th. Good view?
No.
Bonus.
March.
That's February, is it not? Nope, March, sorry. March 12th. March 12th. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And then April is the annual meeting.
Are we doing March the 12th or the 13th?
The 12th. We'll say it is.
March 12th.
All right, Mr. Chair.
All right, nothing else? A motion is in order for adjournment.
So moved.
Moved by Councillor Hubley.
That was quick.
And I do apologize that I'm still learning everybody's name.
That's okay, it's Morgan.
Right. Fine, okay, thank you. Seconded by Morgan Reinhardt, Councillor. That would be it.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
That was easy.
It was.